Welcome to First Five Family Focus, illuminating topics that make a difference in the lives of children and families. My name is Jacqueline Smith, a real mom and advocate for Childhood Matters. I'd like to introduce you to the first in a new series of podcasts brought to you by First Five Santa Clara County. Our audio programs will highlight their mission, which is to support the healthy development of children prenatal through age five. We will talk with experts and community leaders who have been personally involved with the work of First Five. We will tell you stories about families and caregivers whose lives have been transformed by First Five's services. These conversations will be informative and rich with practical tools that can be integrated into the daily lives of all children and families. The focus of First Five is to educate parents and caregivers about the important role they play in their children's first years. The organization provides services and support to all families to ensure that more children are born healthy and do well in school. How do children become good readers is a question quite often asked by parents and caregivers. It is a question that leads us to wonder about the importance of early childhood literacy as an integral part of helping children to be successful in school and become well-educated, well-rounded adults. As part of our ongoing effort to create public awareness around issues concerning children ages 0 to 5, we wanted to have a discussion about the importance of reading with educational consultant and author Diane Frankenstein. Diane consults all over the United States, as well as Asia and Europe, in the areas of children and adolescent literature. In 2009, she wrote the book Reading Together, Everything You Need to Know to Raise a Child Who Loves to Read, where she states, "Showing children they have something to say about the books they read helps them engage and connect with story. Children who talk about stories understand the stories better. This is an essential component of children becoming confident readers, and children need confidence to be good readers. Every child deserves the advantage of being a good reader." In this episode, Diane shares with us her methods for helping children love what they read.
There's a wonderful sentiment expressed by Helen Hayes when she said, "From your parents, you learn love and laughter, and how to put one foot in front of the other. But when books are open, you discover that you have wings." And I believe passionately that every adult in the life of a child has not only the responsibility, but the tremendous and wonderful possibility to give a child those wings.
Teaching parents and educators how to raise children to love to read is something Diane has done for over 20 years. In her workshops and in her book, she introduces people to the transformative power of stories. The richness of her knowledge and the practical methods she teaches has given her an international following. It was through Diane's decades of teaching experience she witnessed firsthand the difference it makes in the life of children when they have the advantage of good reading skills. When I met Diane in her office, her passion for literature was evident by the library of books that surrounded us. She told me the story of what inspires her work and shared her infinite wisdom of how to read with children.
The work that's done with a child to get them ready to learn to read, that's what inspired me, is that I realized that too many children just didn't like to read and that we could change that. Showing them how to get connected and involved and engaged and interested in a story. Lots of people think, including children, if they can read the words, they're reading. They're not. What they're doing is they're barking at print. And I want them to get involved. I want them to be able to see and find characters that they care about what happens to them, that they're curious about. And you only get children involved in a story by engaging them and involving them. And it really, I think it's best probably stated by a Chinese proverb that said, if you tell me something, I'm going to forget it. And if you involve me, I may remember. But if you engage me, then I will understand. So my sort of inspiration to write the book is that I realized there was a winning equation. And it turned out to be read a book, ask a question, start a conversation. And when we begin to show children that they have something to say about the stories they're reading, they become involved and engaged readers. It also quantumly improves their pure pleasure in the story. And if children don't like to read, they'll read for, you know, an assignment or whatever they need to do. They won't be the lifelong readers, which is really something that we can avoid, because that's it's not only a skill, but such a pleasure that no child should be denied.
When should parents and caregivers start reading to a child?
From birth on. And people sort of snicker when I answer that, but your voice, the voice that a child hears way before they can ever understand the meaning of the words, the intonation, the rhyming, it not only calms and soothes them, but in fact, their brains, literally when you think about a child at birth a child's brain is 25% formed. Only 25%. By that time that child is 3 years of age, 85% of the brain is formed. And we know that the questions and conversations that children have in those first years very much impact their eventual IQ. So when you think about the importance of literacy, it's all based on vocabulary and language development. So reading to your children, talking with your children, even way before you're reading them a story, just the sound of your voice is helping their brains get ready of how you make sense of language.
So would you say that early childhood literacy is key to a child's development? You know, you hear parents talk about, well, my child was reading at age 3. And then that sort of raises the question, do children who read at an earlier age do better in school?
Jackie, it's a terrific question because there's some myths and facts out there. So let's deal with some of the myths. The first one, which you just touched on, is my job as a parent is to teach my child to read. Absolutely not. And I urge parents, don't even start trying to teach your child to read. You have a more important job. Your job, before a child ever enters school, is to read them stories, and enough stories that they understand narrative. Two interesting facts. A child who enters school with a vocabulary of 22,000 words has an advantage over the child who enters school with a vocabulary of 2,000 words. After 6 years of schooling, the child with the vocabulary of 2,000 words has still not caught up and is not going to catch up. So we're talking about vocabulary that is learned, not by flashcards, not by learning words in isolation, but learned through conversation. That's where children get ready to learn to read. Many of those skills are learned in those early conversations. So teaching your child to read is not only not your job, but frankly, teachers are trained to do it better than parents. And your job is more important. It's to introduce the pleasure and love of story. Children need large vocabularies, which is acquired through normal talk. And again, not just about books. What did you have for breakfast? What color is your shirt? What color is that car on the street? How many wheels does it have? What are we going to do at the playground today? Do you want to go on the swings or the slide? It's those kinds of conversations. And I think one of the most important ingredients of good parenting today is to have parents be a little bit self-conscious about their communication mode with their children. So if you are plugged into a device, whether it's your iPod or you're on the phone, the fact is you're not talking with your child. And children need early on, they need the facial cues, they need the body language, they need to know you have their attention and that they have yours. So we really want to remind parents of how important their communication mode is with children. Children need about 1,000 stories to understand how a story works. Adults understand that stories have a beginning and a middle and an end. Children do not understand narrative. So you could say, wow, 22,000 words, this is a lot of work. And now I'm hearing that my child needs 1,000 stories before they understand really how a story works.
Sounds daunting.
That's my point. It's not. If you read the same story for 1 year to your child, the same book, let's say Goodnight Moon, 3 times a day, Kids love it because they end up memorizing it, and soon they tell you they can read. You know they can't read. They know they can't read, but they've memorized every line. And this over and over reading the same story, the repetition, is again working the brain to get ready to learn to read. So 1,000 stories is not daunting. In 1 year alone, reading the same story over and over would more than satisfy. I think the most important outcome is less about how many books a child has read and more about how many conversations they've had about them. And I'd like, especially with young children, I'd like to slow it down. I'd like them to know a few books well and know them well and love them. Really spend time with them than to have a long laundry list of all the books that they're checking off that they've read. Those are not the books that are going to turn them into lifelong readers. It's the books with characters that are really memorable that are the books that will carry them into their young adulthood years.
And you said that a parent should start reading to their child at birth. How long does a parent continue reading to a child?
Great question, Jackie. It speaks to one of those myths again. And most parents, and understandably so, assume that once a child is reading, they don't need to read to that child anymore. And interesting, one of the largest studies we have on children and reading, it was a Scholastic study that found that children said one of the reasons they don't read more is that they really can't find books that they like. So the key is somebody, a librarian, a parent, a teacher, a grandparent, a caregiver, an after school, somebody, even in a preschool situation, is handing that child the books that they're going to want to read. And parents, in fact, once their children are reading on their own, need to become more involved, not less involved. And when you think about what really is one of the best outcomes and benefits of reading to your children, is establishing the habit early on of talking with children about what's important to them through a story. And that's not a habit that anybody outgrows, and we don't want to. So I really encourage, I'll even beg parents, don't assume that once your children can read, you don't need to read to them anymore. Ideally, we want children on 3 different tracks when it comes to their reading, what they're doing with books of their choosing. And I want to mention something about taste. Taste is very personal. And often parents say to me, I think what my child is reading is not very good. And my response to them is, look, taste is personal, and nobody comes into the world with good taste in anything, including literature. But we want to respect their taste because we want them to respect our taste. And that's one track, what they're doing on their own. The second track is what they're doing in a school situation, a preschool, a daycare, eventually when they get into school, what they're doing with their teacher in a classroom. And you want to be a little bit involved. You want to know, what are they reading? Less about, do you think I would like it, but, well, you know, tell me, what's your favorite character in the story? What's the story about? Do you like it? Do you think I would like it or not like it? Again, those first two tracks, what they're doing on their own, respect their taste, what they're doing in class. But then the third track is where you get involved, which is you're reading to them something that they probably wouldn't read on their own, that might be a little bit more sophisticated in content, because what's interesting is the ear and the eye receive story differently. So even if they could read a story and be able to read the words, hearing it aloud allows them to understand it more fully than even if they would read the words on their own. And that really doesn't change till about a child is about 13 years of age. So the opportunity to read something to them, whether it be a book, something out of a magazine or a newspaper, and have that element of talk. You know, years ago, probably the most important study that was done in this country dates back to 1985, called Becoming a Nation of Readers. And the single most important recommendation that came out of that study was the most important thing that can be done for a child to ensure that they're ready and really ready for those early childhood literacy skills is to read aloud. The read aloud became the most important. But what we now know, which really we didn't know back in 1985, that so many of the benefits, and there are many, So many of the benefits of the read aloud are lost if there's not the component of the talk, the interaction between an adult and a child. And that's why with early childhood literacy skills, those first 5 years, it's the talk that's crucial. So a conversation could be, one of my favorite books is Hunter's Best Friend at School. I've had the most amazing conversations with little children when they tell me what they like most about the book is Hunter's backpack. Why do they like Hunter's backpack? They like the colors, and they don't have a backpack like that, or they would like one. That, to me, constitutes a conversation. So let's be realistic about what we're really looking for. But I want the idea that when you read a book, the book is not finished until you've had a little bit of a conversation, and not a conversation that's going to sink the magic of the story. You know, too many questions, too many like, well, what happened? I think one of the worst questions we can ask children is, what's the meaning of the story? Now, that's a terrific question that stops any conversation. Children don't understand everything they read, and they need to understand a story before they can ever understand the meaning of a story. I like to start, what did you notice and what did you think? Because it's less about what you know and more about what you think. It was E.M. Forster who said something very wise about thinking. He said, how do I know what I think till I see what I say? Children and adults figure out what we think by talking out our ideas. So whether you're reading a story, whether you're talking about something in the newspaper or a magazine or something that happened at the playground, I want the talk.
Life is very busy, Diane, for most families. How do we schedule this reading and talking time together? I mean, there's the bedtime stories that most families engage in, but I find in my home, before I can ask the question, I'm asleep. So what are some suggestions you have for families?
You know, one of the points I really want to make clear is that I started by saying every child needs and deserves the advantage of being a good reader. Bottom line, it takes a team to make that happen. And that's really where my work with First Five really is sort of the ideal situation, meaning they brought together employees as well as paid caregivers and volunteers, caregivers after school, early childhood programs, grandparents, aunts, uncles, parents, librarians. It takes a team to make sure that children are acquiring the early literacy skills, which again is vocabulary, and they learn it through play and talk, that they acquire the skills they need. But as far as scheduling in a family, most families are very busy. So as much as I love the bedtime read, I also call it the tyranny of the bedtime hour. Last time I checked, at the end of the day, parents and children, they're tired. They're a little cranky. Then there's this assignment in the back of your head, oh my goodness, I need to read to my child because that's really important. And it is important, but there's other times in the day, and especially when children are little, before they're in a school setting with all of the activities that come with it, let's establish some good habits. You know, a poem at breakfast, just a page or two looking at the pictures. You know, before children are even ready to learn to read, I suggest that parents spend time looking at a 32-page picture book and just looking at the pictures and trying to guess and speculate what's going on, what's the story about. What's the mood of the character? What colors are their clothes? What's happening on this page? I ask children all the time, so at the end of the story, what are you most curious about? And if they're not curious about anything, then I don't think that that was probably the right book for that child at the right time.
That makes sense.
So as much as I love the bedtime reading, there's other times in the day. There's weekends, there's vacations. And I will say that with all of the demands on parents and children, we need to talk about the elephant in the room with children, which is technology. You can't talk about reading today without mentioning technology. And when we have statistics that the average child is spending 53 and a half hours a week with a gadget, whether it be a phone or a game or whatever else the gadgets they have access to, that's just way too much time without us asking, how is that really benefiting a child? How user-friendly is it to sort of the growth and development of young children? And we know the American Pediatric Society says that under the age of two, children need no screen time. Children need you to get down on the floor and play and talk and read to them. They don't need the gadgets in their life. It's not how their brains develop. That's why we know that children learn through play.
Diane, will you tell me about your collaboration with First Five Santa Clara County?
Obviously, First Five is involved with almost every aspect of a child's health and well-being in those first 5 years. So what I did for them is sort of work with their employees as well as caregivers, anybody who interfaces with children, to set some best practices when it comes to early childhood literacy. Children come into the world full of curiosity. They know how to learn, but they don't know how to become a successful learner in school. And in order for a child to enter school ready to learn to read, there's absolutely certain foundations and best practices that we need to make sure that they're getting. One of the programs that we did at First Five with the training is we were talking about how when we ask children questions, we can really embellish those questions. So if you would ask a child, what color is the car? What color is the car across the street? How many wheels does it have? How many people could sit in that car? How many people are in the car? So what we want to do is we want to train people just to have enough questions sort of in their toolbox and know how to expand on the questions. Because children are very good at responding, but they can only respond with the vocabulary that they have. The more vocabulary we give them in the question, the more words they have to give us back in their responses. And that's really one of the biggest goals.
So you don't need to be a good reader yourself in order to help children develop their literacy skills.
No, absolutely not. People tell me all the time, as children, they weren't good readers. They don't feel like they're good readers now. And bottom line, if pleasure doesn't drive reading, children and adults won't read. So if you feel like you're really not a good reader, it's very hard to like to read. Nobody likes to do what they feel like they're not good at. And One of the best practices we want to make sure is that there's the right book for the right child at the right time. And that has everything to do with the emotional readiness for that book. So it's less about being a good reader. And even, let's say English is not, many of the people that we worked with at First Five, English is not their first language. There's multiple languages in an organization or a family. And I really urge parents or caregivers, use the language that you're most comfortable in, whether it's Spanish, whether it's Chinese, whether it's English. Use the language that you're most comfortable in, and children love to hear a story. So even if you're not reading them a story, and I have worked with many people who are not literate, they don't read. So what we encourage is for them to tell a story. You can tell a story and talk about a story. Your work on that team of helping child acquire those early literacy skills has very little to do with how good of a reader you are.
How do you choose the right book for your child?
I go with a child's interest, number one. So there's two key factors where we find children their home run books or where it falls apart. A home run book is the right book at the right time for the right child. It's the just right book. And it's not just can they read the words. Often we confuse a child can read the words that it's the right book. There is also the element of an emotional readiness for the story. And it was E.M. Forster who said probably the most, I think, important key to hooking up the right book with the right child at the right time when he said, the only books that really influence us are those for which we are ready. So readiness is key. If a child likes a story, it's the right book at the right time for them. If they don't, there's nothing wrong with the book necessarily or the child. It's just not the right book.
Diane, why do so many children not like to read?
Jackie, it's an interesting question because when you think about it, everybody loves a story, but not everyone likes to read. And many children are really reluctant readers because they find reading difficult. And it is a difficult skill to learn to read. And that's why when children are young, we want to make sure that they have sort of that early foundation that really primes them to enter school ready to learn to read. But where I think it really falls apart with the best of intentions, we often think that by offering children more challenging books that they'll become better readers. Children need a readiness, and they need to be reading books that are appropriate. They need to find relevancy in the books they read. So often they don't like to read because they're being asked to read the wrong books at the wrong time.
Define a good reader.
A good reader is a child who understands what they're reading. Children need comprehension. They do not need speed. And children who can bark at print rather quickly are not really reading. It's not what we call active literacy. So without the element of comprehension, a child is not reading well. And just being able to tell the plot line is only the tip of the iceberg with comprehension. So we want to make sure children understand the story, and one of the best ways is through talking. Who did something? What happened? Why did it happen? All of these who, what, why questions. But in order for a child really to get engaged in the story, we need to get them off the plot line and make it personal. Is there a character in the story that you would like as a friend? Is there a character you dislike? How would the story be different if? What if is a powerful jumpstart to a child's curiosity. What would you have done in this situation? At the end of the story, what are you curious about? Children tell me all the time they don't like the ending of a story. I love that they don't like. So I ask them, how would you end it? They go, I don't know. I said, we're back to I didn't ask you what you know. How would you change the ending? So again, when we get children off the plot line and into the personal, this is when they become engaged readers, which means readers that really understand and comprehend, and that's the definition of a good reader.
Your book, Reading Together, is the foundation of your collaboration with First Five. How would you describe your book?
First, let me say what the book is not, because I think that will really help describe it. It's not a textbook. I had no interest in writing a textbook on children's literature. So the book is divided into four different sections. The first 10 pages, only 10 pages, gives all the tips and strategies about what do we know about children in reading? What are the best practices? How do we engage children in the books that they read? What kinds of books do they like to read? What should we be doing and not doing? As we mentioned, your job is not in the early years to teach children how to read. So tips and strategies, first 10 pages. Then what I did is I went into 101 different books for children from very, very young, preschool, the early childhood years, through the early adolescence. And these are books where I've read and spoken with parents and children and their teachers over many, many years, which means I know they work. So what I did is, instead of a laundry list, the books are grouped by age and grade and by interest. So you can quickly look at one page. And I wanted to give you a little bit of a synopsis. What's the story about? The key, the most important outcome is not how many books children are reading, but how many conversations they've had about them. So on every story page with 101 different titles, there's conversation starters, because I want a child engaged in what they're reading. I want them better understanding and therefore liking what they read. And the more we talk with them about a story, the better they understand. So on each one of these story pages, there's additional suggestions. If you like this book, you would like that one. And I'm interested in really good stories with multifaceted characters, intricate plots, and where something happens. But I also want the conversation. So I'm looking for subjects that matter to children, whether it be doing the right thing, or popularity, or manners, or peer pressure, or friendship, or lying, or cheating, or gossip, or stealing, or divorce, or death. I wanted people using Reading Together to be able to use the book to jumpstart the conversations, either through a story that might have line inside the story. But what happens when your child comes home and you want a conversation? And a good conversation to me is a conversation that takes you someplace in your thinking. And it's hard to know, how do you ask a question that does take you someplace in your thinking? Often we ask questions that take us not far enough. So the third section of reading together is what I call the subject conversations on 42 different subjects that gives you just prompts, four or five different prompts. How would you get into the conversation of lying, where you're sharing ideas and you're figuring out what you really do think about this subject of lying? So you can enter the conversation through the subject conversations or through a book. The idea is to use them both. The more conversation, the more talk, the better.
Diane, what inspired you to write Reading Together?
I saw the difference, Jackie, that books make in the life of a child. I literally saw year after year that children become the stories they tell and the stories they hear. I also saw that children become readers on the laps of their parents. And I was meeting way too many children who told me they didn't like to read. And I would talk until I was blue in the face that it's not that they didn't like to read, they just hadn't met the right book. They hadn't met their home run book. Pleasure needs to drive reading. And so getting a child to read the right book at the right time, a book that they're interested in, that they care about the characters and what happens to them, and to show them, it's not just getting the right book to them at the right time, it's showing them how to make personal connections to the story. What would you do? How would you have done this? Would you have said that? Is there somebody in the book you dislike? I want them to know how to get involved. It's a gift that no one will ever be able to take away from them, that will nurture them both spiritually and intellectually. And to me, that's one of those inalienable rights that every child should march through a childhood and into adulthood with those wings.
What book gave you your wings?
I'd have to say it was probably the Scheherazade, the 101 Arabian Nights. I loved when Scheherazade, in the interest of saving her life, every night told the king a different story. And she would stop it right at the moment, right when dawn came, when the night was over, and when she was supposed to lose her life. And she stopped the story right at the cliffhanger. And she would say to the king, the time is over and I can't finish my story. And he would grant her another day of life to say, but I need to know. And then what happened? That need to know and then what happened absolutely kept the pages turning. I also, through the 101 Arabian Nights, entered worlds where I knew one day I wanted to travel. I wanted to see these places. It literally was my passport to the world. So Scheherazade and the Arabian Nights really were the books that gave me wings. But I get wings daily whenever I meet a new book that I couldn't imagine not having in my life. And that's what we want to do for children. We want them meeting their home run book, a book they can't imagine not having read. And with that first home run book, we'll lead to the next and the next and the next.
If you're interested in helping the children in your life find their wings, Diane's website is a wonderful resource for accessing her book and finding information on subjects that matter to children. The website is www.dianefrankenstein.com. And for more information about the future podcast and First Five Santa Clara County, please visit www.firstfivekids.org.